Hi, I'm Ken Kessler, and welcome to the Sounds of Christmas podcast. If you're new to this podcast, I want to start by saying thanks for joining us. If you're not new, welcome back. Either way, I'm glad you're here. Now, to avoid any confusion, I want to start off by saying there won't be any music played here. This is a place for conversation. I'll talk about Christmas music and some related topics, sometimes by myself and sometimes with guests. If you're looking for music, just go to soundsofchristmas.com and click on the tree or the player on the front page or on the Listen Now page. We play the best variety of Christmas music all year long. Well, except in October, when we play the best variety of Halloween music. Very excited to talk to jazz singer and actress Sarah Partridge. Sarah, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today.
I am glad to be here, Ken. Thanks.
I noticed when I was looking up some things about you, whole bunch of acting roles, Dallas, Perfect Strangers, Golden Girls, Melrose Place, Mad About You, Murder, She Wrote, and then I saw Risky Business. And not only Risky Business, but you played a character called Kessler. And I thought, oh my gosh, gotta ask about that. So was that one of your first roles in Risky Business?
That was my first role out of college.
Wow.
And the story goes, I went to Northwestern University in Evanston, right outside of Chicago, and it has a great theater department. I was in the theater department, and the production team, the director, came to the school to audition because they needed young kids around our age. And then I got a call back, and then another call back, and, you know, I was graduating, and literally I graduated in June, and by the end of that month was on the set of my first movie. And I thought, well, this is going to be easy. Not.
When Risky Business came out, Tom Cruise was certainly nothing like what he is today.
Right.
But I had seen someone had posted a screenshot, and, you know, I don't know if it's accurate because anybody could post anything on the internet these days. But there's a scene in what looks like a high school cafeteria, and there's Tom Cruise, and there's Curtis Armstrong and Bronson Pinchot, and there's Sarah Partridge all sitting around this table. I thought, wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. That was me. That was the first scene, and then there was the famous babysitter scene,
right?
Where you know.
Right.
We can go into that later. But and it was really, here's the thing. So Tom Cruise was not a star at that point. He was about to become one. And he had done a few other movies. He had done Taps with Sean Penn, and he got some really great reviews for that. And he had also done he had done The Outsiders. And he was about to go do All the Right Moves. So he was working and he was getting big, big roles, but nobody knew him on the street. So, but I got to tell you, I met him. They invited me out to have lunch, you know, with the cast one day before we were shooting. And I get a tap on my shoulder and I turn around and it's this adorable guy with this flashing smile who had the charisma and the presence of a true star. And I fell head over heels. I mean, I loved him in one second. And to be honest, we ended up dating for a while until he ended up shacking up with Rebecca De Mornay, which is no surprise being what happens in that film.
Right.
But he had it. And you knew it, you know, right away. So it was kind of a heady kind of time for me. I mean, I didn't spend that much time on the set, only a couple of weeks, but Bronson Pinchot and I got to be real chummy and, you know, went around Chicago a lot having fun. It was just a really fun time. And I still keep in touch with Raphael Sabarge, who was one of the guys too, outside of Curtis Armstrong. Anyway, yeah, it was a who knew?
Right. So with Risky Business and with all those TV shows that I mentioned, did you get to a point where you had to choose between music or acting, or did you try and do both, or how did that work?
The whole thing kind of, let's just say that no, it was not my decision. What happened, I was living in Los Angeles And at that point, at one point, I was 30 years old. And I had worked. Some years I did more than others, but I was not by any means, you know, I'd say a really, you know, starting to get a real presence in that community as an actress. So things, and as a woman at 30 years old, it starts to get a little difficult if you don't have a name. So that's exactly what was happening. And it's just interesting how life is. So as that was sort of winding down, I started dating a guy who is now my husband, and we would often go over to the Improv in Hollywood to just have fun at a karaoke night that they had in the bar, you know, in front of the main showroom. And being in LA, there were these amazing singers who came to like sit in this karaoke night. And my then boyfriend, now husband, Gary, said, "Come on, you know, I know you sing." And we both knew we loved jazz. And he said, "Get up and do something." And I said, "No, I haven't sung a note in a long time. And all my friends were like, go. And so I knew I wanted to sing a jazz song. Don't tell me. I just have never been a pop kind of person. And I found a Summertime, Gershwin's Summertime on the list and sang that. And like the room got really quiet. And then there was all this applause. And I came back to the table and everybody looked at me like, "Why aren't you doing this?" And Gary said to me, "You don't know this about me yet, but I know a lot of really well-known jazz musicians in this town." And Gary is a producer, so he was all over this. And that kind of started it. And the acting slowly died away, and the music took the front seat. That's kind of how it happened. It kind of just segued seamlessly. And I was really happy about that.
One of the things that I really, really like about your music is that for the songs that you choose to cover, it's not, you know, it's not like you could plug anybody in and this is just another version of "Anywhere I Lay My Hat Is My Home." You make it your own. It's a very unique song. There are some of, I was streaming a bunch of your songs today, and there are some that I'm like, "I know the words to this. Wait, what is this?" Because it's fresh and new and different than all that came before it. And I know it's got to be a tough line to walk where you take a song that, I hate to use the word popular because it's not pop, but a song that's well known, a standard, and you want to be, you know, you want to do it justice. You want to be faithful to that song, but you also want to make it your own. That's got to be
right.
That's got to be tough to do.
Well, there is a fine line. Now, you know, you could go on a few ways. One way is the Betty Carter way. And by the way, thank you. I appreciate what you say, because I do work to do that, to make a song my own and not just have it be cookie cutter because I happen to be able to sing. But there are singers like the Betty Carters of the world who said, you know, "I'm going to do everything in my power to make this song not be at all what it is." I don't follow that philosophy. My philosophy is be true to the song and try to, and that fine line is be true to the song, give the people the melody, and then go and stray a little bit. And that's what I try to do. I don't want to make a song that's a standard that people might know unrecognizable. That's not my goal. My goal is to find different things, different parts of that song that I can do different things in. Maybe it's just rhythm. Maybe, for instance, almost I do a tune called "Almost Like Being in Love," and that's in a major key. That was written in a major key, but I decided to put it in a minor key and make it almost a lament. And that just, but I still followed the tune, but it just made it a very different song. I think it's important to find fresh ways of doing these old tunes because they have been done so much. And that was my concern with the Christmas album that I just did. How do I make it fresh?
Especially with Christmas music, it's really tough because people get weird about Christmas songs. They treat them like they're these sacred objects.
Right.
And if you change it, if you tweak it a little bit, if you do it in your style, it's your voice, it's really, it becomes your song. some people are very excited about that, and some people have that "how dare you" kind of attitude.
Well, I think that's because, and I'm about to do a show tomorrow night where I talk about this a little bit. You know, the songs that I did on this album are well-known songs. Let me just backtrack a little bit. And the producer of the album said, you know, I wanted to write a Christmas song. I wanted to find some that were off the beaten path, and I did. And he was like, you know what? I really think that you should just do some of the most popular songs, because that's what people want to hear over the holidays, because people have these associations with these songs. I do as well. You know, I have, you know, White Christmas and Chestnuts by Mel Torme in my mind, and that's what I cling to. And if somebody deviates from that, oh my God, there's something about these holiday songs that are so emotional for people and run so deep back into their childhood. I think that's what that is. But for this album, I had to throw a little caution to the wind and say, I got to do these a little bit differently. Otherwise, who's going to listen? You know, who's going to even check it out?
Yeah. One more version of Sleigh Ride that sounds like every other version of Sleigh Ride.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not going to get noticed. It's not going to get played. But then what you've done with Sleigh Ride is that you've made it a Sarah Partridge song.
Well, that's what I hope to do. I'm putting my stamp on it while still being true to the song. And if you notice, I'm not deviating from that melody very much at all. It's just moving at a really fast pace, and the band is swinging really hard. It's not sentimental. It's excited, you know? It's excited.
So coming up to the Christmas album, A Partridge in a Pear Tree, Jazz for the Holidays is the name of it, by the way. I don't want to just keep calling it the album. You had done the Janis Ian album, Bright Lights and Promises, redefining Janis Ian, and then Beautiful Mind, celebrating extraordinary women, which I think is a terrific and important work that you've done. This album of musical portraits of women in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, each song celebrating a different woman, and it says on there who it is, and that's outstanding. Was that an idea someone brought to you, or is that something
the producer of you know, the Christmas album, I've worked with him on. This is the second album I've worked with him on, and he's a brilliant man, just one of those. The guy does everything. His name is Kabir Segal. He does everything, and in addition to being you know, a children's book writer, wrote for the New York Times, you know, worked for Goldman Sachs, is a multiple Grammy Award winner for albums of jazz that he's produced, on and on. But anyway, Kabir said to me, I like to do albums that are different and make a statement about something. And we were batting around what this would be. And he said, what about women in STEM? And I said, what? How am I going to do an album about women in STEM? And he said, just go ponder that for a while. Go look up some women and start thinking about telling their stories. And that's all he had to say, because that's exactly what I did. And I was absolutely fascinated and enthralled by all the women in the STEM fields who have just done amazing things, who really are unsung heroes, which is okay, but you don't know their names. You really don't. You know, the Marie Curie and, you know, the most famous ones. But I think the most famous woman that I wrote about in that album was Hedy Lamarr, which I think a lot of people now know that not only was she a really famous movie star, but she was an absolute incredible inventor who basically started the Wi-Fi movement but anyway, so it became this true labor of love, Ken. I mean, and I wrote all the lyrics, I wrote the music to some of the songs, and my band members wrote other music and arranged these pieces. And the unfortunate part is that it came out last year, you know, in the pandemic, and we have not been able to perform or tour this album. It's a shame, but hopefully we'll find a time to do it. Because I think it's important too that people know about these women, and that young women, that it can be inspirational for them as well.
Oh, yeah. I think that, you know, and I don't want to sound like I'm just throwing in a plug here, but I think this is the kind of thing that would be a great Christmas present for every daughter out there. I think it's so
that's
important.
Music to my ears, doll.
Well, and I'm not just saying that. I think it really is, because this kind of stuff just, it gets ignored. You know, you can readily come up with the names of men in all of these fields because we're just beaten over the head with it. And, and it should be that girls can grow up and have that sort of positive role model and have these stories to know that, you know, if you want to play with Barbie dolls, that's fine, but there could be a future for you in engineering.
It was important to me. I've reached out to a lot of STEM organizations who in turn reach out to young girls. The Lindsay Vonn Foundation, you know, Lindsay Vonn, the skier, many other foundations who have expressed an interest in doing concerts for young women, a concert of this album really for young women as a way of educating, but entertaining as well. What a great way to teach them, to empower them with music.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's such a better way. I think a better way. I mean, I'm all about the music. I think it's just such a better way to teach rather than even say, well, you know, you could also read this book about, you know, and it's hard when you're a kid, you know, to be told, well, you could read this book about this person who died 50 years before you were born. Okay, well, I'm not real interested in that. But to hear a song that came out, you know, in their lifetime recently, and it's about this, I think it could open a lot of minds and open a lot of eyes.
I happen to agree with you. And I actually happen to be in discussion with a publisher about doing a book where the music, like with streaming today, you know, the link for the song would be there. The lyrics would be in the book. Some amazing photographs or artwork would be in the book. And there's another way to sort of get it out there, you know, which would be exciting. That's kind of a cool thing that's happening right now.
So there's this, and I, you know, I didn't want to just breeze by the Janis Ian album, much different certainly than Beautiful Minds. How did that one come about?
That came about because I had decided I wanted to do an album where I took someone's material who was not in jazz and made it and put it into my genre. So I started exploring other artists, and Janis Ian popped up in a, I'm a member of the NARIS, which is the Recording Academy, and it was Grammy time and we were both plugging our projects, and she was in this kind of chat group, and I thought, Janis Ian, well, let me take a look, because, you know, I knew at 17, you know, and that was her big breakout. But what I discovered, which I didn't know because I hadn't been a diehard fan, was that this woman has produced such a volume of important work. Her songs are so prolific. She is a national treasure. And I quickly realized that. The other thing I realized was that in her early career, as a very young woman, she was very influenced by jazz. Her parents were big jazz fans. She became friends with Nina Simone. And some of those early tunes there's some bluesy, jazz-tinged sort of stuff in there, not just folky. So I contacted her through this chat group, and she actually knew who I was and said, oh, I really like your album. I'm like, wow, thanks.
Wow.
And I said, listen, this is what I'm thinking about doing. And she was really interested. And she said, well, you know, if you don't mind, I'd kind of like to be involved because, after all, I'm not dead. And I said, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Of course I want you involved. And so we actually funded it in a Kickstarter campaign. And I made a boatload of money to produce this album and actually got to go down to Nashville, because I was thinking this, but she said to me, you know, if we could work it out, if we in our schedules, it would be nice. I mean, to like write a song for the album, the two of us. I said, yeah. Well, we ended up writing two songs in 2 days. We became fast friends and still are.
Wow.
So that was one of the beautiful moments of my life, deciding to make that album. That was just a fantastic experience.
What a cool idea. And I'm not certainly nowhere near as familiar with Janis's work as you are, but I have been a fan and I know some of the songs. And how cool to be able to connect and work this out together and have her even write with you and perform on it. Wow.
Just amazing. It was an amazing experience. And what an incredible woman. What a brilliant woman. In talking with her, you see where these lyrics come from. She's so deep and so funny. She's so funny. She's got a great sense of humor, but you know, her songs are known to be very depressing. So when she comes out on stage, she's like, okay, so I just saw her on tour. And she had to unfortunately cut the tour short, her last world tour, because she's had severe vocal problems. Oh, but I saw her shortly before that happened, and she never sounded better. She was just so on. So the opening acts were Livingston Taylor and Tom Chapin. And they're kind of like feel-good, folky guys, you know. And she comes out, and the first thing she says is, now for the depressing part of the show. And everybody laughs, you know, it's great.
So you did this project with and about Janis Ian, and you did the STEM album. What led you from those to doing a Christmas album?
I wanted to do something light and fun, to be honest. The Beautiful Minds was really intense. It was really, really intense. And Kabir said, Sarah, what do you say we just do a Christmas album? You do 8 songs, you make them your own, and you just have fun, you know? And I said, yeah, that sounds great. And it was great, because the last 3 albums I've done have been really intense, because it's all been not Janis's, but original material or really different arrangements and very carefully crafted. And this was just kind of like, let's pick some songs and go for it. And the only challenge of this album was the 12 Days of Christmas. So being that the album is called A Partridge in a Pear Tree, I thought, well, I've got to do the 12 Days of Christmas, but I don't really like that song that much. I mean, it's kind of repetitive and a little boring. And do people really like that song about the partridge in a pear tree? So really, until the week before we recorded, I said to Tim Horner, my drummer, Timmy, like, what can I do with this? Because he's a real idea guy and a great arranger himself. And he said, all right, let's think about this. And he said, what if we take a different group, like we get past the 5 golden rings, and then we do a different groove for everyone after that, but still coming back to da-da-da-da-da-bam-bam-bam-ba-da-da-da, and a partridge. And it worked. And it worked. And I have to tell you, tomorrow night, I am trying that for the first time live. Which should be interesting. We've rehearsed it once, but I think we can do it. But it's a little tricky.
One of the really I don't want to say interesting, because I don't know how interesting it is, but for somebody who's so into Christmas music like I am, the 12 Days of Christmas, there are so many versions of that. And I don't mean like novelty songs or parodies, but just where the gifts, especially 9, 10, 11, 12, where they sort of change, and
right,
some are different than others. And I wasn't really even aware of that until a few years ago. And Pentatonix did a version of this song, and I thought, who do they think they are rearranging the gifts? And then I started to look into it. I'm like, oh, who do I think I am for not knowing that?
Yeah, that's an interesting thing, isn't it? Yeah. And there's lots of back and forth about what the history of that song is. I know very Christian people believe that it's absolutely based in Christianity, and that each one of those gifts is about something in Christianity. And that may be. But then there are other more, what's the word I'm looking for? Non-religious.
Secular.
not secular. I can't think. Just whatever, that the meanings are different, that or that it was a novelty song from what it, when was it done? The 1700s or whatever, 1800s.
Yeah.
And so all these different versions have arrived on this, on the scene. And but that started long ago. It's an interesting history. You could probably write a book about this song.
Oh, I'm sure. And every year there are these financial people who put out the report on what the annual cost of the 12 days of Christmas is. So right. it's in the vernacular. It's, you know, it's on people's minds every year.
Yeah.
Whether or not it's their favorite song, everybody knows it. Every yeah. radio station at Christmas time does some sort of contest where they're doing gifts for the 12 days leading up to Christmas,
right.
even though the 12 days of Christmas actually are after Christmas.
I know. It's deep. It's yeah. deep. So yeah, I'm glad we worked it out because I thought I got to do the song, and I'm really happy with how it came out. Yeah, I think it's fun. It's really fun.
So on A Partridge in a Pear Tree, you've got some standards, Sleigh Ride, Let It Snow, Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. But what I found really interesting is that you also have a couple contemporary songs I didn't expect. Right. Santa Tell Me and All I Want for Christmas Is You.
Well, that really was Kabir, the producer's, you know, stamp. He said, look, and I didn't know this, but I do know now, the number one, you know, he's thinking from a monetary angle as well. And he said the number one streaming song, Christmas song, is All I Want for Christmas Is You.
Right.
Year after year after year. And my and Santa Tell Me also is very highly streamed. And there's a, you know, there's a thing in there where Kabir, you know, knows the writer and he thought it would be a good thing for me to do. Personally, I didn't like either one of these songs, but I ended up liking them. And I really enjoy swinging All I Want for Christmas Is You. I really do. Santa Tell Me was difficult. It's not an easy song to sing. Da 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 ba da ba 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 da da da. I mean, it's hard. And we didn't know what to do with it. But again, it's a very popular song. And in terms of getting on, you know, the Spotify, this is where we talk the business part, the Spotify playlists and all that. It was sort of a record label necessary thing. But I was positive about it. I thought, okay, that's cool. And frankly, Ken, people I know listen to the album, they love those songs because they know them.
Yeah.
So yeah. Why not give the people what they want?
I was very surprised. I was very surprised to find out recently that Santa Tell Me is, I think, the top Christmas song by a female in this century.
Santa, tell me, not All I Want for Christmas?
No, because that was last century.
Oh, yeah,
because
wow.
That was in the 20th century.
Right.
So they're able to say that. I didn't.
Right.
I mean, it feels a little nitpicky, but I didn't realize that Santa Tell Me was that huge.
No, I didn't either.
It really is.
It really is. It really is.
Yeah.
So there you go. That's why they're on there. So you got the old classics, and then you got some new what you could will be classics. They're already calling All I Want for Christmas a classic because it was written in the 90s, you yeah. know?
Yeah.
So
it's almost 30 years old.
Oh my God. Yeah, don't say it. Don't say it.
I know. That's crazy.
I know.
You know, I remember when that song was used in Love Actually, and it was, I don't know, 7-8 years after Mariah had released it, mm-hmm. and everybody wasn't covering it yet. So it was really kind of surprising that, oh, they used this. Well, they're using it. It's a contemporary hit Christmas song, so that's why they're using it. But it really opened the floodgates. And
yeah.
And this goes back to what I was saying before, but your version, because so many of these other versions, they sound the same.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, nobody's going to sing quite like Mariah, but it's the same sort of arrangement, the same sort of everything. But yours swings. Yours is different
yeah.
while still being true to the song.
Thank you. I mean, yeah, I really enjoy it because it swings so hard. It really is like, you know, it's really swings. And yeah, it's different. But, you know, I don't know. I really didn't listen to anybody else's version. I didn't. I don't know how many have been done, if it's really, if a lot of people have done it or anything. I just thought, this is what I'm going to do. So
I get somewhere in the neighborhood of 1,000 songs sent to me every year for the Sounds of Christmas station. A lot of those, I delicately say, are just not quite ready for prime time.
Because, right.
Because just about anybody could record a song in their garage and send it in.
Sure.
And a lot of times that's what it sounds like. Mm-hmm. A lot of releases come out with All I Want for Christmas Is You on it.
Oh, and, okay.
And they do try and sound the same. It's kind of like when somebody takes, when somebody does White Christmas and they're trying to copy what Bing Crosby did, you're not going to sound like Bing.
No,
Do it and sound like you. I mean, the Drifters did such a cool thing with that song. And I'm sure they caught a lot of flack. But they really made it a Drifters song.
Exactly.
And it was really cool and different. And I don't know if people went berserk over that or not, but I know they do now. I have this version of Silent Night that I play every once in a while by Dr. John. And it's very New Orleans. It's a New Orleans romp. And it's very fun, but it's Silent Night. And without fail, every time I play it, I will get at least one email from somebody. And it's one of those how dare you emails. And they're very upset. And
That's too bad.
It's Christmas music. It should be fun.
It should be fun. And these songs have been around for so long. At least be curious about a new take on it. So we kind of did a New Orleans thing with Let It Snow. It's like that second line beat, you know. Yeah, it's not for everybody, but hey, it's music is a subjective thing.
Right. And we all don't have to like the same songs.
No.
But just because you don't like it doesn't mean it shouldn't be out there, that somebody else can't enjoy it.
Right.
I hate to ask this since you just got this out, but any chance there's more Christmas music on the horizon for you?
I have not thought about that, but you never say never. I've learned that. It's possible because, I was actually recently thinking maybe the next one I do is a little more of the labor of love of let's find some different stuff. You know, there's some really great existing Christmas music out there. Some of it is old and in the public domain that I hadn't heard, but I did some digging and I really found some beautiful things. And I might want to do that. That's a possibility, you know, not next year, maybe not the year after that, but a few years, maybe another one.
There's so much. Part of the reason that I started the Sounds of Christmas in the first place was because this is an area where I just feel like traditional radio really fails because there are so many stations that, and they creep up. So a lot of them, 1st of November, as soon as Halloween is done, they're all Christmas. And I don't have a problem with that because I'm all Christmas all year. But they have such a small playlist that it's the same 100 songs over and over and over and over. And that's one of the reasons that I'm sure people, when you say something about Christmas music, they get a glazed look and they're, you know, I don't want to hear about Christmas music because they're hearing Mariah Carey every other hour and they're hearing Bing, White Christmas. And the thing is, both of those artists have lots of other songs that they could be playing.
Right.
But it's just that they stick to those. And when you hear the same stuff over and over again, it loses the magic.
Totally loses the magic. And I think you lose your audience. Yeah. I mean, not all of them, but I mean, people, I think for the most part, people want something new and different, a little bit different, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, and mixed in with the old chestnuts.
Sure.
Mixed in with Bing and Frank and Rosemary and all that, you know?
Yeah. And Rosemary Clooney had so many great Christmas songs that aren't that aren't just the hits. And
that's what I'm talking about. Those would be fun to cover. They would be.
Oh, that would be great because there's so many that, you know, that just start to slip away because nobody knows. There's a great Louis Armstrong collection this year that where they compile a lot of the Christmas music that he did. And that's terrific that, you know, they're trying to keep that around, but it carries more weight when a new artist takes one of these old songs and decides, you know what, I'm going to do Cool Yule. And they decide to do that.
Right. So
if there's not another Christmas album coming next year, what else is, what's up next for you other than maybe a nap?
I don't know at this point. Having just kind of released this, come January, I'll start thinking about the next thing. There was one idea flying around. I have an old friend from school who became a pretty well-known, successful modern artist. And she has these really cool paintings and really interesting titles to the paintings. And I thought, what if I took about 9 of those paintings and their titles and wrote some music to those? And okay, so, you know, something's called, I can't remember the titles now, Pink Flamingo. Okay, so what's the story behind Pink Flamingo and what's that song going to be like? So I thought of that. I talked to her about it and she's like, I love that. And we could do some like art openings and you'd be the band and just something different. One thing that I do know is that I probably will not, again, never say never, but I probably will not ever put out another album of standards again. My first 4, I think, were pretty much that. And that's great. But for me as an artist, I need to keep expanding and I love writing. So I think that each new recording project now is going to be something a little bit different. I don't know that it'll be commercial, but it's going to be a little bit different.
The important thing is that you like it.
Right.
I think that's something that sometimes gets lost for some artists. But, you know, I listened to the songs on A Partridge in a Pear Tree, and it feels like you're in the moment. You're enjoying it. This is something that you care about. I believe you. And if you don't have that sort of material that you're doing, it's not impossible, but it's tough to fake.
Oh, I think so, too. And I was worried about that with the 2 songs we just talked about.
Right.
But I found a love for them. I did. And I hope it shows, you know?
Well, it does, because you did what we've been talking about. You made them Sarah Partridge songs.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you.
You're very welcome. Well, this has been so much fun talking to you. What's the best way for people to keep up with what you're doing?
Well, there is my website, which is in the process of being updated right now. So that's going to have any new releases, music, and where I'm performing. And also social media, you know, look me up on Facebook and Instagram, and all my news is there too. So pretty easy to find.
Okay. And I'll put links to that in the show notes for this episode.
Great.
So everybody can just click right over and check you out.
That'd
Sarah,
be great.
Thanks so much for joining us and talking about all this stuff.
It was my pleasure. This was fun. Thanks, Ken.
And thank you so much for listening and for continuing to support the Sounds of Christmas station and podcast. Anytime you're ready for Christmas music, we're ready for you. Just go to soundsofchristmas.com and click on the tree or the player on the front page or on the Listen Now page. You can also grab our app in the Google Play Store and take the music with you wherever you go. As far as this podcast goes, we're now on over 30 podcasting sites. So if you didn't find us on your favorite today, just search for the Sounds of Christmas the next time you go there, and I'm pretty sure you'll see our tree. Then you can subscribe and you'll never miss another episode. If you have comments or suggestions on this episode, previous episodes, or the Sounds of Christmas station, feel free to reach out to me on social media or through the website. Thanks again, and may you always believe in Santa Claus.